And good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0, and also available on Spotify and a lot of other podcasts. Welcome to the show. Beautiful day here in Whangarei again today. And later on, during the show, soon we'll be talking some headlines from the primary sector. Then we'll have a look at the weather. Then we'll go to some gardening to-dos. And the guest I had on can't make it today. So in honour of International Poultry Day, we're going to do a chicken special. That's right, folks. A chicken special, the show today. But anyways, first one up for a song while I get the headlines organised will be, I'm going to play all New Zealand music again, being New Zealand Music Month today, is the Abel Tasmans with Hold Me Eye. Thank you. The Able Tasman's there with Hold Me Eye. Now it's time for the primary sector headlines here on the Over the Fence show. And Mycoplasma bovis is thought to be isolated to just one farm in New Zealand now, a large beef feedlot. Damien O'Connor, Agriculture Minister, said that the disease, which was first detected in South Canterbury in 2017, and since then has been detected and cleared from 271 properties, and there's been more than 176,000 cattle culled. If the disease is eradicated, it would be a world first. O'Connor marked this milestone with an announcement of $110.9 million funding for biosecurity efforts, $68 million of which will go into continuing the momentum of M. bovis eradication efforts. The remaining $42.9 million would cover biosecurity measures offshore at the border and domestically, and managing incursions into the country, O'Connor said. Watties have had a bumper tomato crop this season, with some of the highest yielding tomato paddocks in the company's 50-year history. The crop hit a record of 140 metric tonnes per hectare, which is the equivalent of 5.6 kgs of fruit per plant, or 14 kgs of tomato per square metre. Watties Managing Director Neil Heffer said 39,000 metric tonnes of field tomatoes had been processed since the harvest began in mid-February. The tomatoes are steamed, peeled and or diced for canning, while others are put through an evaporator and made into condensed tomato paste using products like soup, baked beans and spaghetti. So yes, good season for tomatoes. A Southland saffron grower says yields are slightly down this year, but the quality of the spice is very high due to dry conditions. The spice is the red stigma off a small purple flower, Crocus sativus, and can cost anywhere from $20 to $50 a gram. Kiwi saffron owner Joe Daly, who grows the spice in Garston in Southland, said the harvest was enjoyable this season and should wrap up in the next week or so. She adds, although we've harvested less this year, the quality of the saffron is amazing because it's been dry down here, and the further south you come, the higher UV light levels are, and that vastly increases the colour, flavour and aroma of the saffron. Fonterra has cut its milk price payout range for the first time this financial year as short-term global demand drops. The co-op now expects the season's payout to farmers to be between $9.10 and $9.50 per kg of milk solids, instead of between $9.30 and $9.90 per kg of milk solids. The new midpoint of $9.30, however, would still be a record payout for suppliers. That's good news. And the government's Environmental Select Committee has not agreed to phase out the use of synthetic nitrate fertiliser use by 2024, as petitioned for by Greenpeace. The committee, which has representatives from four parties, has finished its report for Parliament inspection, and the government is saying it needs to provide support and infrastructure to help farmers transition off synthetic nitrate fertiliser to more regenerative kind of practices. Last year, the government capped synthetic nitrogen fertiliser use for farms over 20 hectares at 190 kgs per hectare per year, and this will be reviewed next year. I guess the good thing about that story is there are moves towards that, at least, slow as it is. And Massey University is seeking backyard poultry keepers for a project. The project led by Associate Professor Carolyn Gates from Massey's School of Veterinary Science aims to improve the health and welfare of backyard poultry populations. The researchers seek to co-design a national poultry health information system alongside backyard chook keepers in New Zealand, with hopes of making it easier for them to provide the best possible care for their flocks. So if you want to get involved with that one, go to www.poultryintel.org. .nz. That's www.poultryintel.org.nz. And yesterday, I think it was International Poultry Day. So, yeah, but later on, we'll have a go through a bit of facts and history and things like that about chooks and humans. But anyway, that's kind of the headlines for now. The next song I'm going to play is The 3Ds, Jesus, and we're back after that with the weather. 3Ds there with Jesus. Now it's time for weather here, and it's pretty similar to last week. Unfortunately, it's mainly settled weather today due to high pressure with a few showers for eastern North Island, with southerly winds gradually clearing from the south. The afternoon temperatures for the next couple of days around New Zealand will get up to between 17 and 19 degrees Celsius for the upper North Island, with higher highs expected for the weekend, perhaps into the early 20s, they're predicting. Here in the Waikato, pretty simply sunny, with south to southeasterly winds today. And this week in the Waikato, sunny temperatures today, tomorrow, cloudy Friday, Saturday. There is rain expected Sunday and Monday, with showers next Tuesday and Wednesday. And so the rain on Sunday is expected to be about 18 mils, and they're expecting another 12 mils on Monday. And it was good to see a bit of rain this week, for the first week in quite a few weeks. Daytime temperatures range between 16 and 20 degrees this week, and nighttime temperatures 6 degrees. They're expecting tomorrow night, but then after that it's going to be between 10 and 15 degrees Celsius. And it was pretty cool last night, wasn't it, folks, for the first time? And for the rest of the week, it's going to get a bit cloudier, so that means the nighttime temperature is going to raise a bit there. Yeah, like I say, between 10 and 15 degrees Celsius. And the winds this week are going to be south-southwesters today, moving southerly tomorrow and Friday. West-southwesters on Saturday and westerly Sunday, moving into west-northwesters Monday. Westerlies on Tuesday. Humidity today is somewhere between 73 and 81%. Still very warm out there too. And the sunrise rose this morning at 7:10 a.m. and will set at 5:23 p.m. this evening. The length of visible light is 11 hours and 9 minutes. The actual day length is 10 hours and 14 minutes. And tomorrow will be 1 minute and 47 seconds shorter than today. And the moon, ladies and gentlemen, is waxing gibbous, 68% illuminated, with the full moon coming up on the 16th. And the moon will rise at 2:50 this afternoon and will set at 1:08 in the morning. And I do have some rainfall to bring you this week. Ron Rumble out there in Ruapuki had 16 mils. So that's a good one, Ron. To Hutawai, 21 mils, thank you, Craig. Three Streams, they had 12 mils, thank you, Callum. Okiti, they had 15 mils, thank you, Chris. So they're all kind of pretty similar. Wainaro had 19 mils. Waramarama had 12 mils. Tikaroha only had 3 mils. I hear it's super dry over there and over the plains kind of ways. Tikwiti had 11 mils. The Pinnacles only had 5 mils, which is unusual. They usually get quite a lot. And no rain in Matamata this week. So there goes your weather. It's pretty much going to be quite kind of similar to what you're seeing today for most of the time. But yes, fingers crossed we'll get some more rain Sunday, Monday. All right, I'll come back to some gardening to do's after this one by the Phoenix Foundation, featuring Fraser Days called Beside Yourself. Foundation there with Beside Yourself. And now it's a Gardening to Do's time here on the Over the Fence show. And if you're gardening by the moon, today through Sunday is a good time to sow or plant broad beans and plant out new strawberry plants into well composted beds. From Monday you can harvest the kumara. Yes, kumara harvesting time. And harden them off before storing them. Also a good time to side dress your beetroot with rock dust, so they size up quickly. So there's a couple of nice little tips for you. And what can you plant this week in the Waikato? Well, these things. Alyssum, apples, blackberries, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, calendula, carrots, cauliflower, cyclamen, daffodil, daisy, delphinium, dianthus, feijoas, garlic, hyacinth, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, parsley, peas, pears, poppy, radish, raspberry, rhubarb, rocket, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, strawberries, sweet pea, and tulip. Plenty there. Keep you going. Plenty there to keep you going in the garden, folks. All right. So here goes. Being New Zealand Music Month, of course, like I said earlier, we're going to play all New Zealand music again this week. This one here is The Straight Jacket Fits, She Speeds.
Name and a number, and I'm counting beyond.
And as always here on the Over the Fence show, you can get a hold of me with some feedback, good, bad, otherwise, on overthefenceradioshow@gmail.com. That's overthefenceradioshow@gmail.com. If you want to give some feedback, good, bad, otherwise, no worries. And also on what's happening on the station for this month is, because it is New Zealand Music Month, what we are doing here on the station is I think it's a top 100 or such thing, Raglan songs. And at the moment, you can go on and vote for your favourite or add any Raglan songs that have been missed off the list. There's a thing on Facebook and YouTube lists. And so just go check it out. If there's any songs, Raglan songs that have been missed there, chuck them on. And then as time goes by during the month, I think we're going to have a little vote on, you know, the best songs everybody likes. And speaking of that, here's one from the Shrugs, a local band called Aromoana.
Are too deep.
That's the Shrugs, local band Air Moana. What a good song, isn't it? And now, because this is, it was International Poultry Day yesterday, so we're going to go through right now some fun facts about chickens that you may or may not know. So let's do this one. Chickens can distinguish between more than 100 faces of their own species. Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? Chickens know who's boss. They form complex social structures known as pecking orders. Every chicken knows his or her place on the social ladder. And chickens are not colorblind. In fact, they have full color vision. And chickens like to sunbathe. And chickens experience rapid eye movement, which means they dream. Chickens have pain receptors, given the ability to feel pain and distress. So there we are. And hens defend their young from predators. You'd expect that from most animals, I guess. And chickens have more than 30 types of vocalizations to distinguish between threats. And that's probably it from that list. I've got another 25 amazing facts. Chickens can run at 9 miles per hour. So that means they can run a mile in about 6 minutes and 40 seconds. So there you go. And chickens do not sweat, but they prefer cold rather than hot weather. And there are more chickens than humans in the world. Yes, there are. There's more than 20 billion chickens in the world. That was around about 2018. There's probably more now. And chickens take dust baths. And hens do not play favourites with their chicks. But the first chick to pipe up when the hen brings back food is the first one to get fed. So first in, first serve there. And chickens can recognise people. Do chickens know their names? Well, maybe is the answer to that one. There's no, they do communicate through sound, but I'm sure if you're a chicken owner and you've called out a certain chicken's name, you probably know that they probably might. And chicks start to peck at 3 days old, which is pretty young. And hens only use one of their ovaries. Although hens have 2 healthy ovaries at birth, only one of them was left to develop to maturity and functions in the reproductive system. Some cases when the left ovary is damaged or does not work, the right ovary may develop instead. So, yes. What causes double yolk or eggs, you ask yourself? A double yolk or egg is caused by 2 yolks being released by the ovary at the same time. Kind of like twins, I guess. And they do not hatch into 2 chicks, double yolkers. And a darker yolk is not more nutritious. No. A yolk's shade of yellow depends on what the hen eats and not the nutrition level of the egg. And chickens are one of the few birds to have comb and wattles, which is interesting. And a cloudy white egg white means the egg is fresh. Yes, a fresh egg has an amount of carbon dioxide trapped inside it. This gives it a cloudy appearance. Cloudy egg whites usually mean that the egg is still very fresh since the carbon dioxide has not had a chance to escape yet. And and the age-old question that people have been asking themselves for a long time. What came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, the answer is the lizard. The lizard was the very first creature to have a hard shell yolk. So there we are. There's some kind of chicken facts for your for amusement. And because it's a chicken theme, I think I played this one last week or the week before, but I'll play it again. It's Breast Security and Cake, Rocky Mountain, because they talk about chickens.
Is there a train to the Rocky Mountains? Is there a place where we can dance? I want a tent to sell some buttons. I want a sound man to make a sound sound so loud. I'm gonna cut my nails before I go. I'm gonna cut my hair and get really scared. I'm gonna cut
Bressa Cretin cake there with a Rocky Mountains. You might have heard them talk about chickens there, and of course slipped in is that Fiona McDonald from the Headless Chickens. We might play later on, but for now, I'm going to play you a short talk about the history through the eyes of a chicken. Humans, a long, long relationship with chickens. So I hope you enjoy this.
Foreign bird that gives birth daily. Zoroastrians viewed them as spirits whose cries told of the cosmic struggle between darkness and light. Romans brought them on their military campaigns to foretell the success of future battles. And today, this bird still occupies an important, though much less honorable, position on our dinner plates. The modern chicken is descended primarily from the red jungle fowl and partially from three other closely related species, all native to India and Southeast Asia. The region's bamboo plants produce massive amounts of fruit just once every few decades. Jungle fowls' ability to lay eggs daily may have evolved to take advantage of these rare feasts, increasing their population when food was abundant. This was something humans could exploit on a consistent basis, and the birds' weak flight capabilities and limited need for space made them easy to capture and contain. The earliest domesticated chickens, dating at least back to 7,000 years ago, weren't bred for food, but for something considered less savory today. The aggressiveness of breeding males armed with natural leg spurs made cockfighting a popular entertainment. By the second millennium BCE, chickens had spread from the Indus Valley to China and the Middle East to occupy royal menageries and to be used in religious rituals. But it was in Egypt where the next chapter in the bird's history began. When a hen naturally incubates eggs, she will stop laying new ones and sit on a clutch of six or more eggs for 21 days. By the middle of the first millennium BCE, the Egyptians had learned to artificially incubate chicken eggs by placing them in baskets over hot ashes. That freed up hens to continue laying daily, and what had been a royal delicacy or religious offering became a common meal. Around the same time as Egyptians were incubating eggs, Phoenician merchants introduced chickens to Europe, where they quickly became an essential part of European livestock. However, for a long time, the chicken's revered status continued to exist alongside its culinary one. The ancient Greeks used fighting roosters as inspirational examples for young soldiers. The Romans consulted chickens as oracles, and as late as the 7th century, the chicken was considered a symbol for Christianity. Over the next few centuries, chickens accompanied humans wherever they went, spreading throughout the world through trade, conquest, and colonization. After the Opium Wars, Chinese breeds were brought to England and crossed with local chickens. This gave rise to a phenomenon called hen fever, or the fancy, with farmers all over Europe striving to breed new varieties with particular combinations of traits. This trend also caught the attention of a certain Charles Darwin, who wondered if a similar selective breeding process occurred in nature. Darwin would observe hundreds of chickens while finalizing his historic work, Introducing the Theory of Evolution. But the chicken's greatest contribution to science was yet to come. In the early 20th century, a trio of British scientists conducted extensive crossbreeding of chickens, building on Gregor Mendel's studies of genetic inheritance. With their high genetic diversity, many distinct traits, and only 7 months between generations, chickens were the perfect subject. This work resulted in the famous Punnett square, used to show the genotypes that would result from breeding a given pairing. Since then, numerous breeding initiatives have made chickens bigger and meatier and allowed them to lay more eggs than ever. Meanwhile, chicken production has shifted to an industrial factory-like model, with birds raised in spaces with a footprint no larger than a sheet of paper. And while there's been a shift towards free-range farming due to animal rights and environmental concerns, most of the world's more than 22 billion chickens today are factory-farmed. From gladiators and gifts to the gods, to traveling companions and research subjects, chickens have played many roles over the centuries. And though they may not have come before the proverbial egg, Chicken's fascinating history tells us a great deal about our own. So what about the chickens? What do they think of all this? Since we can't say for sure, why not take a moment to learn more about how animals communicate and how they experience pain?
Here we are, a history of chickens and humans. Interesting, again, goes a long way back if you remember the hemp special a few weeks ago. Yeah, similar kind of timeline, long, long history. But anyways, I'll come back soon with that question you maybe has kept you awake at night even. How did chickens come to New Zealand? But that can wait till after another local song by Parabola West here called The Best Thing.
I haven't surfaced for a long time. Been underwater, out of reach. I saw the sands of time before me, but I could not walk that beach. I always thought I was the current, but now I know I am awake. In this visual I created has drifted from its fate.
There with The Best Thing, another fine local artist. And now it's time for a talk about how did chickens get to New Zealand. Hope you enjoy this one.
How and when did they get here? Did they evolve here? No, domestic chickens as we know them developed from the red jungle fowl Gallus gallus of Southeast Asia. They look a bit like our modern brown leghorns. There were birds in New Zealand in ancient times. In fact, because there were no native animals, birds ruled the whole ecosystem. The most famous is the moa, of which there were several kinds, most enormous. So, how did chickens get here? Did the early Maori settlers bring them? It seems likely. We know that Polynesian settlers brought their livestock, including chickens, to Hawaii and to Easter Island. So it seems likely that they brought them to New Zealand too. But the archaeological evidence indicates that chickens were not here in New Zealand that long ago. At one time, people thought that perhaps the Maori did bring chickens but allowed them to die out. After all, there were moa to eat. Who needed piddly little chickens? But it seems that in fact, Maori never brought chickens to New Zealand. There are no chicken bones in early Maori settlement sites. But by the time the European settlers got here, in the early 1800s, chickens were here. A study by four New Zealand scientists published in August 2016 finally answered this question of where, when, and how chickens got to New Zealand. The researchers located the oldest chicken bones to be found in New Zealand, studied their DNA, and dated them by radiocarbon dating. The bones were found at three sites near the top of the South Island. The scientists found that these old chicken bones dated to the mid-1700s. That's well after Maori settlement in New Zealand, but before European settlement, which began in the 1830s. So how did they get here? Could chickens have been brought by the seal hunting gangs of the late 1700s and early 1800s? It seems not. The early sealers' activities were too late, too far away in the south of the South Island, and besides, they were a rough bunch, living in very primitive huts or even overturned boats, and not much given to gardening or chicken keeping. In the late 1700s, whalers came to New Zealand to hunt the prized right whale. That was the right one to catch because they were easy to catch and yielded lots of blubber. But the early whalers mostly worked the waters of the North Island and didn't venture south until the mid-1800s. But amazingly, the dating of those old chicken bones almost exactly matches the date of the second voyage to New Zealand of Captain James Cook. Captain Cook is famous for discovering New Zealand in 1769, but he also returned to this part of the world several times. And he recorded that on his second voyage in 1773, he gifted chickens to Maori chiefs at Blackhead and at Cloudy Bay, and he released chickens into the wild or sold them to Maori people in the Marlborough Sounds area. That's so close in time and area to the oldest chicken bones found in New Zealand that it seems like those bones must be from early descendants of those gifted and released chickens. And it's pretty solid evidence that the first chickens in New Zealand were brought by Captain Cook.
And there you have it, folks. Yes, it was Captain Cook who dropped off the chook. Now it's time for David Coolgrew on the Heavy Age Chop Me in Half. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. That's David Kilgore with Chop Me in Half, and that's kind of it for the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. A chicken special. I'll be back again next week. Ka kite, and I hope you have a lovely week, ladies and gentlemen.